Back here on Sports Talk, I am Jeff Nowak, bringing you up till 8 p.m. And remember, you can get the free every episode of Sports Talk delivered directly to your phone. Free. Listen to all 4 hours. One specific hour or just the hottest clips. Download the Odyssey app and follow Sports Talk. It's that easy. And we're going to be going to the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line right now. We're going to bring in Ross Jackson, host of Locked On Saints. He also hosts the Second and Saints podcast with John Hendricks. How you doing, Ross? You enjoying this this little month break before everything goes crazy?
Hey, man. Yeah, doing great. Enjoying it, but already missing football. It's weird to say that I'd rather be out there sweating than in here not.
Yeah, well, the weather definitely gave us a chance to watch some football last week, whereas this week it has been nothing but rain. But that's fine. I guess, you know, first things first, obviously you were out there all 3 days of mini camp. It's been – this time of year is always weird because it's like you get that kind of piecemeal version of, okay, I think this is what I see. I think this is what I see. And then you kind of get it, you know, that flood of information. What were your main takeaways from the week of practice last week?
Yeah, I think the big thing last week that I really enjoyed seeing were the situational drills wherein the team was working sort of these either end of game or end of half situations. That's a really good test for how quickly this team has kind of learned its offense. And what I mean by that is, A, being able to deliver, understand, and all be on the same page when it comes to play calls, which are, of course, now shortened, a little bit more manageable, we've been told, and things like that. But being able to see that. And then also seeing players go out there on just the, you know, the OTA practices and minicamp practices, and players be in the right spot and be where quarterbacks are expecting them to be and be where, you know, they're where everybody's looking for them to be, all these other things. So I was really encouraged, to borrow from you know, the Sean Payton days, with what we've seen from the New Orleans Saints offense with this new offense, this new scheme, this new system, and their ability to be able to translate it into that hurry up, no huddle, quick pace kind of environment. Doing it with, you know, another team that's actually trying to, you know, compete with them in a regular season is going to be very different. But seeing the building blocks at this point in the offseason was a good thing.
Yeah, and I agree with that. That was one of my takeaways as well, because you saw, I think it was Wednesday and Thursday's practice, you saw Derek take the ball in the situational thing, right? It's like you're talking about a minute left, however long, you're down 5 or 6 points. And what I appreciated was it wasn't just, okay, he's hammering the ball to Chris Olave, he's hammering the ball to Alvin Kamara, whatever.
Yes, yeah,
he
good point.
Moved the ball to a lot of different people. I think the first touchdown went to Kamara on kind of a wheel route where he was able to isolate him on Carl Granderson in coverage. I think the second one went to Chris Olave, who beat Marshawn Lattimore in coverage. I just think, you know, when you look at how last year went and like what's the difference between an 8-9 win team, a 9-8 win team, a 10-7 win team that gets to the playoffs and hosts a playoff game. Well, a lot of times it's okay, those week 5 games where you have a chance to go down the field and score and maybe send that game to overtime and you don't get it done. Week 6, you have a chance, or no, week 6 and 7, I should say, against the Jaguars and the Texans.
Yeah.
Both of those games came down to that situation and the Saints didn't deliver. Well, you gotta, you know, obviously doing it in practice is one thing, you gotta deliver in a game, but if you can't do it in practice, why should you be confident?
You're definitely not doing it in a game.
Right? So
right,
I just think, you know, in a new offense, in a situation where you would have been able to look at it and say, okay, well, he didn't get it done, but it's a new offense, right? Give him time. You don't have to say that because you did see it deliver. I just thought that was – I got a lot of confidence out of seeing that happen.
Same. Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's such a big one. And then even looking at, you know, situations like, you know, Jake Haener at one point leading the team down, I believe it was on the first day of minicamps, leading the team down to get Blake Groupie into field goal range. That takes you right back to that Green Bay Packers game, right, where they had the big lead. They needed the drive from the backup quarterback to get into a little bit more of a manageable field goal situation and then be able to get that. And so I think that, like, that's another one where you kind of see these things. But I love the way that you highlight that it's, if you can't do it in practice, you're definitely not going to be able to do it during a game. So at least being able to see it in practice, especially this early too, Jeff, when it's all so new, I think that that's one of those things that really kind of gives you a little bit of optimism in terms of this team being able to find its rhythm with this new offense earlier than it found its rhythm with the offense it was running last year.
You know, you bring up Blake Groupie, and that's just a good segue into a subject that I know you're interested in, because I'm interested in it, and I've heard you talk about it. Mm-hmm. We talk about it with the same, like, giddy excitement of, like, we get to watch kickoffs again? and Darren Rizzi has kind of that same tone when you hear him talk. He's excited because it's not that he knows exactly what's going to happen, because he really doesn't know what's going to happen. Yeah. I don't think anyone really knows what this new kickoff environment is going to be in terms of, you know, 32 teams are out there. There's 32 different coaching staffs coaching in ways that they think is right, but who's to say? You know, I think you're going to see every team kind of watch every other team and say, like, well, they're doing it the right way. We got to start doing what they're doing versus, oh, they're doing it way wrong. Definitely don't do that.
Yeah, right.
I'm just curious, you know, what, you know, we've heard about, you know, safe teams considering, oh, maybe having a safety kickoff so they have an extra guy to make a tackle, you know, directionally kicking. We saw the Saints out there kind of working on combination returns. One play, Taysom Hill threw it across the field to Rashid, who actually dropped it, which is not great. Hopefully that doesn't happen in the game. But, you know, what are kind of your early reads on how this is going to go and how this could impact just games in general?
Yeah, I think the first thing that's going to happen is that in the preseason, there's a lot that's going to not work. Yeah. And I think that's going to force people to be a little bit down on it. But I think that as teams adjust throughout that, get to see it more, I think it's going to become a really big benefit for NFL teams. I think that the big thing, and it's going to be a big benefit for fans, that miss actually watching kick returners play. I mean, you know, we came up in the days of guys like Devin Hester and Dante Hall and these incredible returners. I always like to throw Peyton Hillis in there too, just for a little bit of fun. but so, you know, and of course Michael Lewis here in town, and you know, over the course of the years here in the recent, I guess it's fair to say maybe five or so years, half a decade, we've watched the kickoff just be kind of erased entirely from the game. I mean, everybody just kicks out of the end zone, everybody just starts at the 30, at the 25 or whatever, and then they just, you know, get going. And so I think that's one of the biggest things you're going to see is a return of the kickoff. I know that it kind of negates the surprise onside kick. You now have to be in certain situations in order to utilize first down the onside kick. You have to acknowledge when you're planning to do an onside kick because you're having to kick from a different area of the field than where kickoffs are going to be. But that's okay. They kind of demolished the onside kick last year or the year before anyway, and so I'm not too worried about that. But I do think that, like, what this does, that it gives you a little bit more. It brings kind of one of the NFL's most electrifying plays back, does so in a manner that has proven to be more safe than the original sort of version of this that we're all accustomed to, and really kind of gets special teams back into the focus of the game. I think we're going to see things change again next year, probably make it a little bit more of a penalty in terms of starting field position when kicked out of bounds. Instead of it being the 30, move it to maybe the 35 or something like that, so it's a little bit more of a thing you want to avoid doing. I think we'll still see kickoffs go out of the end zone, but man, I really do believe we're going to see more kickoff returns this year, and that's going to be a lot of fun for fans watching at home.
Yeah, one thing that Rizzi brought up that I thought was a really good point is, you know, the end of game scenarios, right? So a team kicks a field goal or scores a touchdown with, I don't know, 5 seconds left. And right now, under the past rules, you could just kick like a little squib. They have to field it, and they really don't have enough time to do anything, so that's the final play of the game. You can't do that anymore. You have to either kick it out of the back of the end zone, which means that a team gets the ball at the 30 with a chance to run a play, or kick it into that setup zone where they have a chance to return it, because if you do that little squib kick, they get it at the 40. So you've erased the scenario where there's no play happening at the end of a game, and I think that's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you're forcing teams to actually make a football play, which I appreciate.
Yeah. Yeah, which brings us back to the excitement of moments like, what is it, the River City Miracle or whatever, River City Relay. And then, of course, you know, the Saints have had their own versions and things like that, of course. Like, there are all of those plays that we kind of just reserve that we would never see again, because in those in-game situations, no one ever kicked the ball up short. Once they move the kickoff spot closer, and then, you know, people would just kind of boot it out of the end zone or do that squib kick. So now it eliminates a squib kick and makes an actual returnable kickoff possible for teams in those situations. So again, it just brings back a little bit more of that excitement. And, you know, the squib kick you can't do because you have to kick it within that 20-yard to goal line area. Otherwise, you're giving the ball at the 40. So you definitely want to avoid that, because that's absolutely shot territory easily.
Ross, I want to circle back around to the offense and specifically highlight the wide receiver core, because, you know, we've talked to some listeners and Bobby and Mike have talked about it. Like, where does the Saints wide receiver core rank as far as NFL receiving cores? I just think that Chris Olave, Jeff, you've mentioned this a couple times on the show, that he's in for such a huge year, just based off of the amount of targets he's going to get alone from Derek Carr, that you're expecting him to take another big step. Like, he made a step from year one to two, but ahead of year three, like, once again, we've talked with Brian Baldinger about this, that typically you'll see some receivers take that huge leap in year three, like CeeDee Lamb and Davante Adams did it, and that's what they're hoping from Chris Olave. And so my question for you first, before I get into the other receivers, is what are your general expectations for Olave in the 2024-25 season?
Yeah, I think, you know, really the big thing that one of the big things that you're looking for is more scoring, right? He's got 9 total touchdowns over the course of his first 2 seasons. I think he's got to cross that 4.5 touchdown, you know, average. And really what would help him out a lot is actually doubling that. For all of the amazing things that Michael Thomas did at the peak of his game, 9 touchdowns was kind of a ceiling in terms of scoring potential and things like that. If Chris Olave can cross that and get into those elite numbers of double-digit receiving touchdowns, I think that would really be him kind of announcing his arrival in the NFL. And there's absolutely going to be opportunity for him to get there. There's no one ahead of him. He's the bona fide number one guy. So I think that's the first place that I start. The yardage can waver because it's going to depend upon kind of what his role is going to be. He's going to have to be a 3-level threat, but this offense is also probably going to ask him to take some, you know, passes at the line of scrimmage and see what he can turn them into. And so there's going to be a little bit of a challenge for him to do that. Him developing as a yards after catch threat, I think, is another big part of his game that you'd love to see. But I think the kind of biggest thing for him is, can he turn into a little bit more of a prolific scorer at the wide receiver position? We certainly saw him do that during his collegiate days at Ohio State. I absolutely believe he has the ability to do that in the NFL and with this scheme, where he's going to have the opportunity to get it done. So that's really, to me, the biggest thing, is how he turns into a more prolific scorer as a wide receiver over anything else.
And then Olave's wide receiver one, as you mentioned, Ross, is clear cut, no doubt about it. Right. And then Rashid Shaheed, wide receiver two. Outside of that, the wide receiver three battle, I think, is kind of underrated, because, you know, you heard Dennis Allen talk about A.T. Perry, and a lot of people were expecting some big things from him this upcoming season. He showed a little bit at the end of last year. A lot of his production came within the final basically 6 weeks of the season. And A.T. Perry, the former sixth-round pick, you know, he's a big-body receiver, someone that could step into a big role for this offense. But from what Dennis Allen was saying, it's just like he needs to see more consistency from him on a day-in, day-out basis. But he also mentioned the same thing about, like, Kendra Miller. He said that that's something that you can say about a lot of young players that have plenty of talent. They just need to be consistent in day-in and day-out work. So what are your thoughts on A.T. Perry is potentially battling for that wide receiver role, three role, with guys like Cedric Wilson and maybe even Equanimeous St. Brown?
Yeah. I kind of put A.T. Perry and Cedric Wilson kind of in the same category there. It just depends. Do you want the guy on the outside or do you want the guy on the inside for any given play? To me, Cedric Wilson would be a number three as an inside, as a big slot option, while A.T. Perry would be a number three as an additional outside X receiver type option, the split in, lone, wide, you know, out wide kind of guy. So I look at that as the role for A.T. Perry. And I think A.T. Perry has the formula for a breakout season in 2024. But when we talk about a breakout season for a wide receiver three, well, we're talking about a guy to get, you know, 600 yards, find the end zone, things like that, like contribute to the overall success of the offense, not find a ton of individual success for himself. So even in talking, you know, in the sort of like hyperbolics of a breakout season for a wide receiver three, we're still talking about a pretty modest production season. So I think it's possible for A.T. Perry. The three things that I always look for a breakout guy are, first of all, talent, which we've certainly seen from AT. I think there's consistency that he needs as well, but he certainly shows the flashes, the talent, all those other things. I think he's got the momentum. Every single stat he put up last year, he put up in the last 7 games, because he didn't appear in his first game as a legitimate receiving option until week 12 in Minnesota, when Michael Thomas ended up being injured. And so he's got the momentum from the end of the season, and now he'll have the third thing, which I always look for, is opportunity, right? We just talked about Chris Olave having opportunity. I think this whole wide receiver core has opportunity because, as Jeff alluded to earlier, this Clint Kubiak offense is predicated on spreading the ball around when it comes to the passing game. So I look at A.T. Perry in that light. I think that he has the ability to have that wide receiver, you know, that breakout wide receiver season that's relative to where he actually stacks up as a wide receiver in terms of the opportunities that he gets, snaps that he gets, all those other things. And so I look at him as a guy that has that opportunity. I think that the consistency, though, is the big thing that, as you pointed out, and as, you know, Dennis Allen has talked about before, that you really want to see from him. It's not about the flashes. It's about what he can do on a down-by-down basis. If he can raise that floor, then I think he's in for a really, really nice season, a respectively very nice season here in 2024.
Yeah, the wide receiver room is interesting to me, and in part because, and I've said this a few times at this point, but you know, the room itself is very different from a Saints wide receiver room that you can remember.
Yeah.
You go back all the way through the Sean Payton era, it's not what you would be used to seeing. You're used to seeing those big-bodied guys, those blocking guys. Now you have these kind of slight-of-build guys, but I think this is the right year for that, because when you look at this offense, you go over and look at Miami, look at the receiving core that they have and what they're able to do with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. And if you're trying to find a kind of a contemporary, I think that's it. Like, we can look at the 49ers, we can look at what they do, we can look at Minnesota with what Clint did up there. But, you know, if you're trying to find like a scenario where this type of wide receiver core, at least with the top two guys, has worked very well, I think that would be the example that I would show. And that's a pretty high production example, and obviously the Saints don't have a Tyreek Hill speed guy, but you know, no one does, so I don't think that's
right.
a negative, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, the way that I would look at it is, you know, the you're looking at kind of the Miami build of archetype without the multiple marquee names, right? Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, both those guys, marquee names. Household to borderline household names across the league, especially after Jalen Waddle just recently got an extension and all these other things. So his name's been in the news, all that other stuff. And so I think that there's that part, but then there's this New Orleans Saints wide receiver room that has that speed, that also has one marquee name in Chris Olave, but doesn't really have that second marquee name. But I don't know if it needs it, as long as you're getting the role that you want from each of these players. So I look at it as a little bit of a blend, right? You've got Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed. They kind of replicate the speed that guys like Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill bring to the field. Again, not up to Tyreek Hill's, you know, what he does, but they replicate sort of that build and that archetype. But then you have a Cedric Wilson, who's more like a Juwan Jennings over in San Francisco, and then you have an A.T. Perry, who's more like a K.J. Osborne over in Minnesota. So it's a little bit of kind of a blend of all of these different receivers and receiver prototypes that have been successful in these wide zone schemes sprawled all across the league. And then you add a guy like Bub Means, who is this like 6'1", 200-plus-pound wide receiver that looks like he can be a better pro than a college player, that almost kind of fits into the, you know, some things that you might see over with the Los Angeles Rams, kind of what they tried to do with Van Jefferson years ago. So I really kind of dig the idea of kind of this amalgamation of, hey, what kind of receivers work in all these different wide receiver rooms across all these wide zone offenses, and then try to put all those different types of builds, or at least a variety of those different types of builds together in one system and see how it works. I think it's a logical move that makes sense, even if it lacks the multiples when it comes to the marquee names.
And then we've talked a lot about offense here, Ross. I want to throw a defensive player at you. The free agent pickup that they scooped up that went kind of under the radar, of a one-year deal, $5 million for Willie Gay Jr., the linebacker. Mm-hmm. And just what you've seen so far from him, because, you know, I mean, it's just like he's betting on himself in a sense with this one-year deal, yeah, that he can parlay it to a long-term contract after this year. But I think he's a really good fit for what the Saints want to do defensively.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that one of the things, I think he was the guy that I kind of looked at and I went, oh, okay, that's going to be the signing that everyone's going to look at nationally and go, oh, we didn't talk about that enough. Kind of like the impact that defensive tackle Malcolm Brown had years ago. So it was like, oh, no one thought about that move, but then all of a sudden he had such a big thing. But I mean, like, how many times do you see a guy wrap up his rookie contract and then get signed elsewhere, and then the team that he gets signed away from does like a big thank you post? You know, he was a fan favorite, he was a constant contributor, and he was a playmaker for that team. And I think that's the word in particular that I think that he adds in terms of potential to this New Orleans Saints defense, is that he brings a little bit of that playmaker ability, speed, takeaway ability, aggressive play style, all these other things. The other thing that I think that he adds, though, is that he adds a third starting linebacker, which is really important in today's NFL. We're talking about, you know, who's going to be the third wide receiver and all that, but how many times are we really going to see a third wide receiver in lieu of a second tight end or a second backfield player? I think that we're going to see a little bit more of those, what we call 12 and 21 personnels. First digit being the number of running backs, second digit being the number of tight ends on the field. And I think we're seeing that across the entire NFL right now. In fact, last year, according to Next Gen Stats, the highest rate of 12 personnel, two tight end sets, since 2016, last year, when they started tracking that metric. And so I think that that's where that third linebacker becomes really, really important. Because while we're used to seeing the New Orleans Saints kind of live in those two linebacker, five defensive back nickel sets, instead, I think we're going to see them a little bit more in their base sets, which will include three linebackers on the field as the two tight ends, two running back sets continue to tick up in the NFL, as the offenses are now overcorrected away from the trend that they started on defenses, which was spread the ball out, more wide receivers, more passing, force defenses to get lighter. Now all the defenses are light, and so the offenses are getting heavier. And I think the Saints are just maybe one step ahead of that by adding a guy like Willie Gay.
Yeah, I also think it never hurts to add a player that's won back-to-back Super Bowls to your roster.
As a winner.
Yeah. The further we get away from the back-to-back-to-back Saints playoff seasons, the further we are away from having any players on the roster that understand how to win the playoffs. So I'm always for that, and the Saints do love them some former Chiefs players. But thank you so much, Ross Jackson of Locked On Saints. For all things New Orleans Saints, subscribe to Locked On Saints on the Odyssey app, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Ross, thanks so much again, and enjoy some of this downtime, whatever that means in your neck of the woods.
Absolutely, buddy. Same to you. Y'all take care. Stay safe. Thanks so much for having me on. I'll talk to y'all soon.
Thanks, Ross.